Hi there, and welcome to The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping you find your true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only you can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind. The voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me as we have a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice.
Communicator Rusty is here. I hope you're having a great holiday season. A lot of times this time of year it's very difficult to communicate, even though it's supposed to be about family and friends. When we get together, we find that it's difficult to stay in touch, and sometimes the blocks are coming from us and sometimes they're coming from other places. And I'm proud to be joined today by Craig Bowman, who is going to tell us a bit about himself and what he does. Craig, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Would you just take a minute and kind of tell our audience what your specialty is in terms of helping people and learning how to communicate more effectively with themselves and others? I was fortunate enough to benefit from it, and I would like to have you tell them a little bit more about what you do.
Yeah, sure. I call myself a transpersonal coach and counselor, and it's a little bit different from some of the other coaching and counseling that others provide. The primary focus that I like to do initially anyway is to try to make sure that people are connecting to the different levels of their self, which are differentiated in different dimensions and levels. And I think it's an important thing that can help them across in many areas of their life when they're able to connect and align a little bit stronger at these different levels.
When you talk about levels of self, explain to our audience exactly what you're talking about, different levels of self.
Sure, yeah. Well, depending on the different philosophy you study, most of the material that I look at is the metaphysical and channeled information that's out there today. But it's pretty consensual that we have different levels of ourself, including the personality and the soul and spirit, and it can get more complex the deeper you go into some of these teachings. But those are the primary ones, and we certainly, according to many, have parallel existences, past lives, future lives, and the more that we can really connect and let go of, work with our ego and connect to the deeper components of ourself that are those inner levels, wherever they may be, in different frequencies, different dimensions, and the more we can have an expanded level of consciousness and operate really from higher levels and values, so we can be less blocked and really be creating from a place that is more, more centered and more true for ourselves.
So basically what you're saying is that we have different selves and different realities. We have different parts of ourselves that are out there, and what you do in the transpersonal coaching is to try and bring those together?
That's one of the things I do, sure. And one of the primary things, because I think that will help anybody, and no matter what they're trying to accomplish, whether it be in work or in relationships, and then we go from there, depending on what the person's wanting to do in their life, and then that gets a little bit more personal. But there are a lot of different things that a lot of tools and practices that are available, especially today with all the changes to the planet and to the collective that we can benefit from, and a lot of sources of spiritual support that are more than willing to help us with our daily life.
Why do you think we're separate? Why do you think that there is the separate existences in these different realms?
Well, I think that's an esoteric question, and it also depends on what you're reading out there. But I believe that it's part of the plan, a way spirit can differentiate and have different components or different aspects experience different things in order to expand itself, experience light, love, whatever you want to, however you want to look at it. But these differentiated components, if they're being expressed as a personality or as a fragment that transmigrates across lifetimes, then it just creates all kinds of opportunity. And if it's at a level that is relatively limited or inconscient, then you can't have lessons and experiences that a higher spirit wouldn't normally have. So it's another way of just creating more for the absolute to experience.
What's the average person that's coming to you looking for? What are some of the common things that they want?
Some of these people are on spiritual paths. Some of them are struggling in different areas of their life. Some of them are struggling in work, or they're kind of sick of the same old patterns that they running into in different parts of their lives. Some of them I've helped with attracting a spouse or a lover into their life, in which it's just had a lot of benefit or success. Several of the people have gotten married and been able to attract the person or the mate agreement that they've asked for. So it can be really specific and miraculous in that way, because oftentimes in the ways we request these manifestations, they often happen exactly the way in which we request. So it in that way it can be great. In other ways, people can come in and they can they can be depressed, or they can be actually struggling from a psychological issue, and with some of the integration that goes on with these exercises, they just feel more uplifted. They have more energy, or something shifts in their life where they're seeing more flow and appreciating things and being more present. One of the things that I think that everybody can benefit, especially today, is by taking advantage of those changes to the space-time construct that's allegedly happening. So you can get more into the present, into the flow. Some people will call it the fourth dimension or the fifth dimension, and so you won't have to take as much time to do some of the things you want to do, or you find yourself going about in your daily life and things will just be clicking more, and you won't have to delay as much, or you get more done in your daily life.
Can you do this? Do you do this only face to face, or can you do it over the phone? How does it work in terms of a normal session?
It can be done over the phone. I do that with some clients that are farther away, but I prefer doing it face to face. It's a little bit better because I can feel the energy and the intuition stronger that way, and it's just more rewarding. But certainly, these you can access some of the tools and do just as much of the work via phone or distance.
Well, those of you that are out there, please feel free to join us if you want to talk to Craig or get some of his advice or maybe a little bit of an opening for you. Our toll-free number in the U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494. Toll-free worldwide, 877-489-6350. So can you take us through a normal, like a regular session with a client, how it starts and then kind of how it goes?
Sure. The initial sessions are a little bit different from the latter ones. I like to hear what's going on with the individual, what some of their struggles are, what they would love to have different in their lives, and that doesn't have to take a long time. It's not traditional psychotherapy where that's the primary operanda. You know, we're not just allowing them to vent, it is important to just kind of click and see where they're headed, and then once that's done, then I can find several areas where we can specifically go into, and also things again that will across the board work for anybody. So after that initial first part of it, I usually the tool that I like to use the best is doing a written manifestation exercise, which so I have the person grab a pen and paper, and have the person request these things themselves, and I offer suggestions for ways in which they can request this. I think that writing is for a couple reasons is the best, because for one the person is learning to do this and be empowered themselves. They're taking control of their situation by requesting things themselves, and so in the long run they're learning ways they can do that in the future. They don't have to depend on anybody like myself when they do encounter something they want to change in their life. And secondly, by writing, it's the most permanent or specific way to ask for assistance from either your own higher self or through spirit, because it's, as opposed to thinking or meditating or just speaking, it's again specific and written down, and to have an objective third party person like myself, it cuts a lot of the ambivalence away from what you should be requesting, because when we do it ourselves, sometimes we will say, well, I'm not sure if I want this or A or B, and if I do this, and how is that gonna, you know, what kind of problems could ensue? Because I've done this for years with clients and friends and myself, I've learned a lot of the specific tools that and requests where we can get rid of some of those obstacles or problems that might arise, and make sure that it's happening at a pace that's comfortable for them.
So for those of you that are out there that have a New Year's resolution, something that you might want to change in your life, this is a great opportunity to talk to Craig, and maybe he can give him some help, or he can give you some help on getting started. Again, please feel free to call us at any time, 888-228-4494 or 877-489-6350. How did you get involved in this?
That's a good question. It started decades ago when I was, after studying psychology and getting a degree in that, I felt a little, it felt like there was much more that needed to be answered. And philosophy, traditional philosophy didn't quite cut it either. So reluctantly, I went to a metaphysical bookstore and started consuming whatever I could. And it was channeled material that really hit me and spoke to me. Of course, other teachings are out there and they're perennial that are great, and people resonate to different stuff, but it happened to be channel material that I really liked, and there's a lot of it out there. Some of the teachings that I really liked, like the Michael teachings or the Kryon material, and there's some great stuff today. Abraham's very popular, of course.
Wait a minute, before you go on, explain to our listeners what you mean by channeled material. I'm not sure that everybody knows exactly what you're talking about.
Sure. Channeling traditionally means accessing different levels of consciousness, and mostly spiritual and benign sources that are outside of space and time, and that are willing to provide us information that may be beneficial and also emotions and energy that can be healing. And so a channeler will go into a meditative state. They'll either be co-conscious or they'll really let go of their own consciousness and allow for that higher level of consciousness to come in. So they're in higher planes of reality, usually the causal plane or the higher astral plane. And it's a little different from mediumship, which is more contacting discarnate humans. This is intended to be higher levels of consciousness that's beneficial for the species.
Alright, so you got involved in the material, and this was the material that you liked the most, and how did that lead you to where you are now?
Well, I was still pursuing more traditional route of therapy and counseling, and after working a couple years post-graduate school as a therapist, I really wanted to integrate the two paths that I was leading. So I researched some schools, came out to California, got a PhD in East-West psychology, and thought that was a good way to do that, and I was able at California Institute of Integral Studies to write my dissertation on this topic on consciousness evolution for the species, and since then have rewritten it to have a book published by SUNY Press hopefully next year. So in all that research and personal study and reading all that material and putting it in a format that I kind of liked. I was able to just gather all kinds of information, but also tools and connect with some of these spiritual sources to call on and get practice with. So I think that's allowed me to form my own brand of counseling and coaching and offer some of these tools to individuals while they don't have to do all that work and research themselves.
And can you talk a little bit more about some of these tools specifically for our listeners? And can you also just speak up just a bit? I can hear you pretty well, but I just want to make sure everybody out there can hear you. And again, if you want to join us, 888-228-4494, 877-489-6350. Get a jump start on your New Year's resolutions. Ask Craig a question or talk a little bit about something that you might want to create and get his feedback and advice on how to make that happen. So can you talk a little bit more about some of those concrete tools that people can use? You mentioned writing. What else are we talking about?
Well, there are meditation techniques that we can do, and there are different ways in which to look at things, and also to be just updated about some of the changes that are happening to the planet or to the area you may be living in. And these teachings also, importantly, have a way of looking at the evolution of an individual, where they are in a particular lifetime, but also across lifetimes. So it's sometimes helpful to not only understand the perspective you may have, but also the perspective that other people may have, or how it may manifest in politics or at a nation level. It can help people really get a better, larger picture of some of the challenges that they face, whether they're an older soul and they're living in a younger soul country and they're frustrated by some of the things and why people perceive the way they do. And then this perspective can help with that. In the writing exercises, there's a lot of different tools or ways you can request that take advantage of some of the things that are available. I think I mentioned a few before, but just the fact that the frequency of the planet, which is commonly known as raising, and the time itself is changing, that can be a simple request, or contacting a specific ascended master, for instance, who may specialize in bringing more awareness or protection or help with a person's love life or something. There are just many things that the person can request, and it's really limitless with this process.
Most of the people coming to you, though, are looking for pretty basic information, though, or you said some are on a spiritual quest. Do you have any examples of some of the people that were looking for higher awareness and what they might have been looking for without using any names?
People that were looking for information or with specific things for their life?
You said some of the people were looking for more spiritual awareness. How would that manifest, or what were they asking for, really?
Well, I think a lot of the clients can be confused, and they may not even be necessarily requesting for greater awareness, but they may be putting in a way that's negative. They may be saying that they're blocked in many ways, and they might feel frustrated, or that they know they want to get somewhere, but they're not sure how to get there. So with some of the things that we do request, then that it naturally happens without even really them requiring to, seek out a book or a teaching, because with some of these shifts that happen, then they just, their heart opens, or their mind opens and allows for some of their innate wisdom to come in, or it may lead them to be in the flow better. So they actually go, they'll bring in somebody they're supposed to, a teacher or a friend or even a decision to go to a school or something. Some wild things will happen, and it will shorten the distance and the time for those things to happen. Somebody, a client recently wanted direction, and after the first session, she made a decision to go back to school, and it probably from where she was before, it probably would have taken her a year or something to make that decision or to find the ability to do that. So that's one example of how that can come about.
You've talked several times about the changes that are happening on our planet and then the time shift and so forth, and I assume that's all the information that's revolving around this idea of 2012. And if I'm correct, is that the correct?
That's one way of looking at it. In my research in the book that I've written, I look at the 25-year span from 87 to 2012 as the primary or microcosmic time where a lot of these macro changes or planetary changes are happening. Mostly, though, the biggest variable is the frequency of the planet increasing and the reception of a bunch of energies that are arriving from other parts of the cosmos. But that doesn't mean that all kinds of great change or sociocultural happenings will commence at 2012. There may be more of a easier ability to get change done, but really I don't think we'll see a lot of the institutional change or at least the manifestation of things that are really benign and benevolent until later in the mid part of the century. Of course, we're seeing a lot of a shift or a pendulum change in from a neoconservative one to a more liberal one, which will create a lot of this potential for change in the future. But a lot of the change that's happening now from the harmonic convergence in 87 through 2012 is more energetic and esoteric. So we're not necessarily, some people can get really frustrated and they've been expecting for all this miraculous change to happen, and it is happening, I think, and I believe. But the 2012 is also a marker of some astrological changes, too, which you know, a lot of people are aware of the change from Pisces to Aquarius, but apparently that there are many other larger cycles that are ending and beginning about that time, too. So I think that's why all these prophecies from across culture and time dating way back have been able to predict a lot of these changes coming up because it can be looked at astrologically.
Do you see consciousness in this realm evolving? Do you see it as something that's an evolving? Let me back that up. What do you think consciousness is?
Consciousness to me is a part, an aspect of everything or the spiritual underlying oneness that pervades the cosmos and the unmanifested spirit. I think on a level that's not fragmented, I think spirit is consciousness, love, and energy. And so the consciousness part is an infinite source of intelligence and awareness that can, you know, it's always there and always present. So I think that consciousness or the collective consciousness is often thought of I think like where the, especially in this planet, it's kind of where we are as a species in the spectrum of evolution. And so I think that consciousness originally is a non-material thing, and then it steps down in frequency to have experiences and then material experiences in a lower dimension in a dense plane of existence. And so once it's here and once it begins, then it goes through a gradual awakening and evolution towards creation of that oneness. And so it can go through stages of experience, manifestation, or form, and evolve back toward a more aware state, a consciousness that's more actualized.
You talk about, and I was just trying to look it up right now, I was thinking about a philosopher that talked about the end of history. I guess Fukuyama mentioned that, but there was another one of the German who talked about the end of history. And they talked about the fact that everything that had happened has already happened. And our guest last week was kind of sharing their idea as well of, oh, Hegel was the one who pronounced the end of history. But he talked about the fact that everything had happened, and now what we have is just a repeat, and so that things are happening over and over and over again. And what she had mentioned last week was similar to what you were saying about consciousness entering a more dense form of reality to experience itself in a different way or a different kind of thing. If that's the case, then what are the new experiences that we have to look forward to? Because it does seem at some level that there is some redundancy to the experiences that are being had. Not that they aren't being had by everyone, or is that the goal? Is the goal to have them by everyone? Or what do we have to look forward to in some other types of experience in this form of reality?
Well, I think that there is, that we are going towards something that is new, and there are things that we can look forward to that even weren't capable on this plane ever before. I mean, there are, when you talk about things that nothing new can happen, or everything that was supposed to happen has already happened, I think there are cycles of experience and things do get repeated. However, I think we're stepping into a time where our environment and our reality is actually becoming a different kind of reality. And so the game that we're going to be playing is based on a little bit different laws, different rules, where in the past we've been mostly guided and ruled by karma and conditioning and law of cause and effect that was partially hidden thanks to an agreed-upon illusion of separation in a dense reality. Well, with a dense reality, with the reality becoming less dense and more spiritualized, you actually have a reality that's literally bridging two milieus that used to be much more segregated. So you have a physical plane that's lightening. It's having more access to the spiritual levels, or the what used to be incredibly veiled. And so you can have experiences and even emotions and thoughts that used to be reserved for a spiritual, non-physical experience. And you can, and one easy to experience thing would be the fact that in the past we've always had experiences that were kind of ruled by our thoughts and our actions, and we would see the consequences over time. But now with some of these changes that are happening, we're experiencing these things much quicker. So we're starting to realize that we're more of the masters of our reality and of our domain, and so we can ask for things, we can experiment with things, and we can do it with much greater awareness, because those veils between our personality and our spiritual selves are relinquishing some. Our awareness is expanding, and as a collective, which is one of the more exciting things, is as a collective, then we're becoming more spiritual, but our value system is getting elevated. So we're not going to be doing things purely out of competition and individuality because of our belief in separation, and actually because things were more separate back then in a dense reality. Things have, with them actually bridged, then we feel the collective more. We recognize that our actions have great impact on others, and others have that on us, so we have to, as our world gets more global, we have to work in greater cooperation. So you're going to see not only in culture and society, institutions change dramatically, but our own psychological and spiritual experiences should be more ecstatic and joyous and fun. This level of environment doesn't allow, allegedly, for some of the negativity and darkness that once was able to be present.
You know, Schopenhauer, I know I was listening to something about Einstein, and one of his mentors, Schopenhauer, talked about the veil of Maya, which was the difference between the separate individual experience that we have on this side of the veil, and on the other side of the veil was the universal oneness of everything, and that it wasn't permeable, that it was not able, and I think Einstein at some level believed that through science and through a philosophy or a religion of the cosmos, that there would be an opportunity to make that crossover. It sounds sort of like what you're talking about. We're coming up on a break. I was wondering if you would give our listeners some information if they want to get in touch with you. How can they contact you if they want more information?
Sure, yeah. My website is bowmancraig.com, BOWMANCRAIG.com. Phone number 510-499-5266. They can contact me there, or my email address is craigwb99@yahoo.com.
Great. And Don, we are coming up on a break, but before we go, Craig, can you give our listeners a little, just maybe a little tip to help them jump off the new year if they do have something they're looking forward to or something they want to change about their lives? Can you give them a little something to take with them or add to their wish as they write it down?
Yeah, I think this is a great time to just plan a little bit, take a few minutes to just sit quietly, think about all the Don't be shy. Think about all the great changes that they would like to see. Make a list of them when they're you know, in a good space. And they can be general. They can be specific. They don't really have to know how they're going to get there. But don't worry. There's all kinds of support. So go ahead and ask for it and see what happens.
Great, Craig. Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. I wish you a happy holiday and a wonderful new year. And we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Rusty. Take care.
All right. Don, we can go to a break real quick, and then we're going to come back with Lark Fonseca.
Hi, my name's Rusty May, and I'm the host of The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping people find their true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only they can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind. The voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me each week for a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice. I'll see you on Sunday.
Welcome back. We can't get a hold of Lark right now. We're still working on it. If she's out there, give us a call. But if not, we'll just have a chance to talk a little bit about New Year's resolutions. I think a lot of us, it gets to be this time of year. I know for me, for example, I get incredibly, I don't know, the holidays, as much as we look forward to the holidays as being a time of joy and family and togetherness, for some reason it seems really, for a lot of us, especially as we get older, it also seems like a time when we remember things like people who have left us or relationships that haven't worked out or things like that, and it brings up a lot of issues. And the New Year's resolutions are usually a lot of times for us to try and fix something about ourselves, to start over again. You know, you wake up and you know, I'm going to do this. Now, next year, I'm going to stop doing this, or I'm going to lose 40 pounds, or I'm going to do whatever. And, you know, it's about a time of trying to feel good about ourselves. And I think that it comes from a holiday season when we don't feel very good about ourselves, or, you know, maybe a holiday season where we indulge too much in the quote-unquote pleasures of the holidays, whether it be wine or women or song or men or song or whatever it happens to be. And we get to the end of the year and we start to think about the year that came before. And, you know, I know there's people out there, and obviously if they are, then great, and they're probably not listening to this show. But there are people out there who probably set goals, you know, I want to spend more time with my family next year, or I want to do this, or I want to do that. And they ask themselves, and they ask for something that's a positive. You know, my brother Mike is a perfect example of that. Here's a guy who's been doing the same job for 16, 17 years, and it is a very, if you really look at it closely, it's a very mundane job. I'd equate it to doing taxes. It's kind of like the same thing every year. And somehow he's able to, each year, sit down and set some goals and to kind of recreate himself. And that allows him to continue to have the enthusiasm and gives him the power to move forward. Unfortunately, for most of us, I think of the New Year as a time when we are critical of ourselves, and we start thinking about the things that we don't have or that we don't do, and we start trying to fix ourselves. You know, and this show is all brings you guests every week who talk about fixing yourself. A couple weeks ago we had the Canes. The Canes came on and gave us the idea that working on yourself doesn't work. That being present in the moment and allowing certain, you know, habits and so forth to complete themselves. And so the idea of really setting a goal or something like that would be counterintuitive to the idea that things naturally complete if you're just aware of them. So awareness is enough to complete a cycle. Some of us may be struggling with the fact that we don't have things that we think we should have. And so we start setting goals to accomplish some of those goals. And the idea is that what we really want to do, and I had this experience, and I don't know if anybody else out there has, and please join me if you have, 888-228-4494 or toll free 877-489-6350 worldwide, is setting goals that actually came true that once they came true didn't actually make me happy. I can remember a time in my life when I went through a period of goal setting where I had, set several goals for myself, including making a lot of money and starting my own business.
Your recording has reached the maximum length. To replay your message, press 1. To delete and re-record your message, press 3.
We've got a message on our
answering
machine here.
Options,
we've got
press
an answering
4.
Machine. We left
to
a message for Lark,
message,
and apparently we're
star.
Still talking to our
to
answering
send this
machine.
Message now, press pound or hang up.
Well, anyway, we're going to move on. Hopefully the answering machine will figure that we're done and hang up on us.
To replay your message, press 1. To delete...
We're having technical difficulties at the studio, and Don is loving it. Thank you, Don. We appreciate all you do, man. We really do, and I hope all the DJs out there tell you that on a regular basis. So anyway, back to setting goals for yourself. One of the problems I have with that is really making decisions about what would, in fact, make you happy. And this goes back to the research on the people that win the lottery. We see all the lottery winners who end up committing suicide or losing all their money or end up doing something crazy with it. And the truth of the matter is that money without some sense of who you are and what you want to spend it on does not accomplish the goal that I think most of us are looking for, which is some sense of being okay. feeling comfortable, feeling connected. And money can't buy that. I mean, money is definitely something that is, you know, it's something that can help us in our pursuits of what it is that we're looking for, but it's not the answer. And a lot of times people set goals for themselves to make more money. What is it that you're looking for? Because money, it's not the green little dollars and bills that we're chasing around, the dirty, germ-infested pieces of paper that go through millions of people's hands before they get to us. What we want is the things that money can provide. So maybe instead, this year, of thinking about setting goals for ourselves, we think about what we're looking for. And then break that down into smaller pieces that are easier to manage. Say, for example, that you're looking for security, and that money provides security. So instead of asking this year for more security, ask for the opportunity to be a little bit more present with your thoughts and some of the things that cause you to feel insecure. I know, for example, several of the clients that I work with who on a regular basis really set themselves up for failure by the way that they think. You know, they constantly are sitting there overwhelming themselves with worst-case scenarios. And so it causes them to be insecure about their future. And in this particular economic climate, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to be reaching for another $10,000 or $20,000 or $50,000 next year. I mean, I think all of us would be probably pretty happy to do as well this year or next year as we did this year as we go through this change. But what we can look for is something similar to what I've heard about the Asian people in Thailand that live on the rivers that swell every year. They build very manageable small huts on these riverbanks because their main source is fishing. And they also realize that every year that these huts are going to be washed away in the floods that come naturally with the rains. So they don't put a lot of stock into their house. They don't put a lot of stock into the idea of permanence. And I think one of the things or one of the reasons that we look so much for money as a way of providing us security is that we put so much stock in the fact that the material possessions are going to, at some level, be permanent. You know, there's that commercial out there with people walking around with their number underneath their arm, you know, $2 million or $6 million or whatever that number is, as if that number is permanent. And if nothing could be more obvious right now in this economic condition, I'm watching my brother-in-law who's in his late 50s and thinking about retiring after a 25-year career, a very successful sales career, and seeing his portfolio drop by 50% in the last 3 months of his life, last 3 months of this year. I think he's, you know, to try and wish that money back into existence would be denying the very real fact that what it may be is that what we're looking for is permanence in things that we know not to be permanent. It's always amazing to me here in California where we are surrounded by our share of natural disasters, not to say other places don't have theirs in the Midwest and so forth, but we seem to have a variety in earthquakes and fires and floods and so forth. But you see people standing around their home that they built in a place like either a floodplain in the Midwest or in the fire-prone mountains of Southern California. When their house burns down or their house is flooded and destroyed or it falls off the cliff because of mud, you know, of mudslides, they're standing there looking at you like, this was supposed to be forever. This was supposed to be permanent. I expected to be here for the rest of my life or to have this for the rest of my life. That, to me, seems to be the fallacy. The fallacy is the permanence of anything that we experience in this physical reality, other than the permanence of our own internal reality, our own internal dialogue, our own internal thoughts. That relationship with ourselves is something, although very dynamic, is something that continues to be with us, is something that's permanent. But the idea that material possessions are permanent and that we start each year thinking about the permanency of those things, I think, is a fallacy. The other thing is to see yourself as a finished product. You know, the idea that at some level, once I accomplish this, then I'll be okay. Once I lose 30 pounds, then I'll be happy. Once I have a significant person in my life, then I'll be happy. You know, I didn't ask, geez, Craig that. But I wonder about that. It's always interesting to me when somebody asks for a life partner, and then they get it. You know, you go to somebody and you talk to them about setting a goal, and all of a sudden the next week you meet Mr. or Mrs. Wright, and you've met them. And they come back and you go, I met that perfect someone. And then you, then what? You know, it's almost like it's the end of a movie when the heroine and the hero are riding off into the sunset on the horse, and everything's perfect and romance and beauty and the music and the credits roll, and you see them and it's perfect. And then it goes to black screen, and what always runs through my head, and maybe I'm a bit of a cynic, but of course it's the holiday season, I get a right to do that. Maybe what rolls off at the end of the credits, they go off into the dark, and then I start to think about 5 minutes down the road, the woman or the man on the horse starts to say something like, I'm hungry. Where are we going to sleep tonight? What are we going to do for money? Now that we gave up our dowry for our love, what is it we're going to do for money? And starting to have those conversations that even if you find your significant life partner, your magic puzzle piece, that something that makes you real, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, yes, you've got a partner. Now you've got somebody to walk through the rest of the path with. But it doesn't complete you. I mean, I think that it's a fallacy to think of things as completing you, as in some way, shape, or form making you better, because it's like they come and go. You know, you're in a relationship with the most significant other in your life, but that doesn't mean it stops. The life doesn't stop. The world doesn't stop. You can't just get right off. You can't just, you know, transcend into another reality. And maybe if you can, that's great. But then in the other reality, there's probably some challenges that come because we are constantly in process. And goal setting, I think, a lot of times talks about finishing the product. This is what I need to be happy. This is what I need to be secure. This is what I need to be loved. This is what I need to be a part of something. And I think the reality to most of us is that once we get it, we realize how short-lived it is. You know, in my football career, I was fortunate enough to be a part of two championship football teams. One, my brother reminded me of when I was a senior in high school, although I was hurt. But also my second year of junior college, we won the junior college championship in Washington State. We beat Walla Walla, Washington, which is where the prison is, and all these guys look to me to be right out of prison. But we were able to beat them on a goal line stand the last second. We beat them 13-7. And it was exciting. I mean, it was wonderful. And everybody rushed out on the field, and they sprayed champagne on us, and we got trophies, and we all basked in the glory of the event. And then it was over. And we had accomplished the goal. And it was great. But it was over. And unbeknownst to me, but probably beknownst to me at some level, that was the end of my football career as well. And as I look back on my football career, I don't think about that as being a defining moment. I think about the 12 years of organized football that I played. The path. The guys that I met. The coaches that I had. The practices. The hits. The touchdowns. I can still remember this day, my first touchdown. And it was all part that culminated at some level with a quote-unquote championship, Washington State Junior College Championship, which I don't even know if we were given a trophy. It does not belong to me anymore. There probably wasn't even one. But it wasn't a meaningless kind of a thing other than to recognize the fact that we had accomplished a goal for that particular year. But it wasn't the goal that was important. You know, it was all those days that led up to that. You know, it was the 6 months of practice. It was the friends and the coaches and overcoming challenges. It was learning how to do a whole new thing. It was learning how to run a different position. It was learning how to build my body and deal with different things. That's what it was about. The goal itself was meaningless. Not meaningless, I don't mean that. But you know what I'm saying? It's like great, but I mean, I talk about that with romantic love as well. I mean, that's one of the things about romantic love that kind of, I think, eventually sort of wears off, is that initial unbelievable attraction. Now, there's still people, I still feel the same way about her I did the day I met. Well, good for you. Not very many of us experience that. Most of us experience the dynamic ups and downs of relationships. And there are times when you love each other, and there are times when you fight. And there are times when you can't be close enough to that person, and there's times when you just need a break. And I think that's more real to most of us. But setting goals in the new year and thinking about yourself in 2009, maybe it starts with thinking about yourself as a work in progress, as a project that is not going to be completed by getting something or someone in your life, or by losing 15 pounds, or by doing something. I always have that happen to me. I've been a member of a gym since I was in my 20s, which is 25 years ago. And I enjoy it. And I go pretty much every day, if not every, you know, it's pretty much every day. And every year at New Year's, then we'll get a mask migration into the gym. It'll be unbelievable. You'll go to the gym at a time when it's normally not very busy, and it'll be packed full of people that you've never seen before. And these people are so passionate, and they are so excited. They are going to start the new year with their goal of losing 30 pounds or getting back into shape, or I don't know what their goals are. And so they go the first day, and they are unbelievable. I mean, they will work out for 2-3 hours. Seriously, they'll go in there and just push themselves beyond belief. And then you'll go back the next day and you'll look for them and they're not there. And then the next day you'll look again and maybe they're there that next day, but you can tell something's not quite right. And it's probably because they're in a huge amount of pain. They push themselves beyond their limit. They haven't been in the gym in years. They go in there and they do 2 or 3 hours worth of exercise and they can hardly move the following day. So the day after that they make it back into the gym, but they have a little less fervor and they're trying again to restart that fire. Well, they get back into it, they try, they get through that particular day, they wake up the next day, they're probably even more sore than they were before. Or say they make it a week or two and they stop, they don't see results, and they start to get discouraged. And so they take a few days off, and things start to get in the way. And the next thing you know, they're not going to the gym again. I think half the gyms in this country, if not more, are probably being kept open by people who get a gym membership on January 1st of every year and who never go. I think gyms probably rely on that. Salespeople in gyms probably count on that. They try and get as many people as they can to sign a one-year contract, and they realize that 90% of them aren't going to follow through on that contract. Why don't they follow through? Because what they do is set a goal to accomplish a thing instead of setting a goal to change a lifestyle. A lifestyle that includes exercise is something that can be done not only in the gym, but on your street outside of your house. If your goal is to get 30 minutes of exercise every day, then you could do that in your own backyard. You could walk outside of your house and make sure that on a daily basis you get to walk 30 minutes around your neighborhood. Or you get 30 minutes of exercise by pushing your baby in a stroller. Or you get 30 minutes of exercise by walking your dog. Or you get 30 minutes of exercise by going to the gym. And what you try to do is you find out ways to change the way that you approach your life. So it's not like getting a thing. So say you lose that 30 pounds. At the point where you lose that 30 pounds, do you quit? Do you stop going to the gym at that point? If you drop 3 inches off your waist, is that the point where you say, I can stop? Or do you change a lifestyle choice which says to yourself, this is what I want. You know, I want to add exercise into my routine. I'd like to add this into my routine. When you talk about being closer with somebody you love or meeting new people, you talk about adding things to your routine. I'm going to put myself out there more. I can remember a couple years ago joining a bowling league, and that was the place where I met my last and most recent girlfriend, who we were off and on for the last 3 years, but we had a nice relationship, and I still count her as a friend of mine. The only reason is because I said to myself, I need to add some new things to my routine, and one of those was joining a bowling league, and that introduced me to new people and led to a relationship. So can we add things to our lives? You know, instead of thinking about losing 30 pounds, can we add exercise? You know, instead of thinking about, you know, stop drinking or stop smoking, can we add healthy lifestyle choices and a reduction in our habits to our next year's pattern? And to realize that we're going to make mistakes and we're going to fall off that wagon, and to see ourselves as a work in progress instead of when we fall off that wagon, we quit. You know, I've been fighting with chewing tobacco since I was 13 years old, you know, and I've had that in my life for the past whatever number of years that is, 32 years. And I continue to work on that, and I've tried to quit, and I've been unsuccessful, so I continue to try and limit the number of times that I put that stuff in my mouth on a daily basis. And over the years, I've made some progress. You know, I've gone from an entire can a day down to where I chew maybe 3 to 4 to 5 times a day. And I start to notice the times when I'm more likely to use it, when I'm stressed or I feel uncomfortable. And I try and find new ways to deal with that stress, whether it be through taking a walk or meditating or taking deep breaths or getting a nap or sometimes eating food. Sometimes for me, that's where I miss. I don't eat as often as I probably should. And I use tobacco as kind of a managing substance. I know a lot of people out there do that. They use it as a weight control thing. And as you start to notice that, like the Canes told us several weeks ago, you might begin to find other ways to manage those experiences and those emotions. But to try and change everything overnight, I think, is a bit of the American dream, but it's the American dream that ends in success. I mean, if anybody watched football today, you saw the Dallas Cowboys, America's franchise, completely unwrap in front of us. You know, this is a team where they've had great goals and they try to accomplish this stuff and they just got killed today. And we've heard stories of great athletes. Michael Vick, for example, a very successful athlete who is now in prison because of dogfighting charges. How do you know when somebody's successful? I mean, don't we just sort of, as a society and this tabloid society mentality that we have, that we sit there and we look at people as a success, but then when they fail, like Britney Spears or something like that, that we shoot them down? I mean, is Britney a success or a failure? Well, right now, this year, she seems to be somewhat on the upswing. After a year of some pretty crazy antics, she seems to be finishing the year with a top 10 hit and a new album. She's got hair back on her head. Nobody's chasing her around. She's out of the insane asylum. So how do we judge Britney's year? Was it a success or a failure? And if you think about goal setting that way, how do you really judge whether or not you're succeeding or failing? How do you know? You know, if your goal is to get a new car, well, good for you. You got a new car. That may raise, and in fact, raise your stress level, because now you've got this beautiful brand new car. You're worried about it getting scratched. You're worried about parking it in certain places. You're worried about your kids spilling food in it. You're worried about whether or not your dog's going to get in it. And you worry all the time about this inanimate object that you were hoping was going to make your life better and in some ways may make your life more hectic. Why is it that you want a new car? What is it about a new car that's going to give you some sense of being in a better place or feeling better about yourself? What are the things that you're really looking for? Maybe in this new year, as part of the Conscious Communicator's gift to you, I would offer to you a list of things that you might take with you into the new year. Things that you might think about that can really change your life. And that starts, and I think we've heard that over and over again this year. And this is my first year on the radio, and I would count it as a success. And I thank Don and everybody at BBS Radio for this first experience. Who knows how far it's going to go. But if any of you out there enjoy the show, I hope you pass it on to friends, because that's the only way we're going to get it out there, is if you're passing it along. But the first thing we've heard on this show over and over again is the idea of present moment awareness and being open to that opportunity that's in the moment. For example, the other day I was really stressed out about going to meet a client of mine and getting to the gym. And I couldn't really decide, and I tried to stay present in the moment. And what I decided to do was to go ahead and see the client. They called me and asked if I could go early, and I said yes, and I went to meet them early. And I asked them if they wanted to go for a walk, and they said yes. So I was able to combine the two things. Are we off? Working on some new stuff here at the minute. We've got some background music as we go out, but again, some things to think about in the new year. Present moment awareness, trying to be very present with yourself and the opportunities that are right there in front of you. See yourself as a work in progress, not something that's going to be completed, not this year or next. And remember, above all else, the most important thing is that you have a relationship with that voice inside of your head. Something that's positive, something that speaks to you, something that gives you the opportunity to be successful no matter what happens or what material possessions you do or don't have.
Come to the end of another hour here at the Conscious Communicator, and I can't thank you enough for joining me on this journey. Your phone calls and emails are greatly appreciated. And if you like what we're doing, please invite a friend to join us. This is a conversation that needs many voices. And as we open up the possibility of conscious communication to more and more people, the results will be a freeing of the true self from the burdensome armor of ego and a flowering of the potential that is available to all of us. Until next time, peace out, travelers. The rest is still unwritten.